Well, obviously, we're back at it.
Victor to Mo Baker from three in the wing. Got it!
I can't hear myself. This is Cameron Indoor Stadium West. It's unbelievable.
Good night, Vienna. Pistol firing. Luka's three-point jumper. Good! Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four!
Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham. Joining me from Baker's Bay, I believe, is Kyle Porter. And we... Is that right, Kyle, before we get to the other Kyle?
I am unfortunately not representing Casa Amigas in Baker's Bay right now.
Okay, no tequila for Kyle Porter. Joining us is Kyle Fredrickson of the Oklahoman, covers Oklahoma State football. Kyle, thanks for being back on the pod.
Yeah, hey, I'm good. I'm also not drinking tequila, so I think we're both good to go.
That's good. We have a sober podcast here. spring ball wrapping up for Oklahoma State. Just what's the vibe of OSU football right now? Kyle's been entrenched in golf. I've been entrenched in Thunder basketball. Just kind of give us a summary of spring football for OSU.
Oh, I mean, like every single program in the entire country, its optimism is at an all-time high, and everyone's played really well, and you know, spirits are good going into the summer where guys are going to have great workouts. I mean, that's the PR version of it all, what everyone's going to say. It's kind of how spring ball works. But at the same time, you know, this is an OSU team that brings back a whole lot. You know, you'd think just from a very broad perspective, you lose your best player in Emmanuel Ogba. You know, you wonder how a team is able to respond from something like that. This seems like a team that's built to kind of withstand losing its star. You know, you could argue that Mason Rudolph has now kind of solidified himself as that go-to guy, as the premier player on the team. And when that guy's your quarterback, I mean, that's going to put everyone at ease. And as we've seen with this OSU team over the years, it goes really as its quarterback goes. And when you got a guy like Mason Rudolph, you got to be excited. So even, you know, beyond all the, you know, just over optimism coming from everybody, it should be a fun year. It's setting up with, I think, a lot of interesting storylines. As you know, we're really not that far out from July and Big 12 media days and getting this whole thing started.
Kyle, who do you feel like was the most, I guess, surprising name to sort of emerge from spring ball, whether that was on the disappointing side or somebody that emerged as a candidate to be a real star in 2016, and maybe not even necessarily somebody you observed, but just somebody within the organization that Gundy's high on. Who was that name, or maybe two names that were that guy?
Oh, you know, this is a guy I've written about a little bit over the spring, but it's got to be Ramon Richards. Because here's a guy where you wondered just where his head was at. You wondered how, you know, having to sit on the bench so much after being a starter his freshman year. You know, of course, he got in some games and he made some big plays. He had a couple interceptions. But he's gone from a guy who I think Glenn Spencer in a lot of ways sort of dismissed as a veteran leader to a guy who's just been just that. I mean, you talk to Coach Gundy and Coach Spencer, that's a guy who's become kind of a leader on this team when, you know, after losing Bean and Ogba and Ryan Simmons, you got to have a few new guys step into that role. And, you know, just talking with Richards after some practices this year, it's clear he's in a good mental state. He's in a better spot than he was before. So of the guys that we know about, that's an interesting name. But, you know, the guy that I'm really excited to see in that same defensive backfield is Derek Moncrief, man. That Auburn transfer, you know, if you watched any of that spring ball highlight tape, I mean, he is just huge back there. Like, he looks like an SEC linebacker at safety. And there's a lot of good reviews about him, too. So those are two guys that I think OSU fans should be pretty excited about watching on Saturdays this fall.
So they get another transfer from another school to play defensive back. It's kind of an annual event, isn't it?
Well, they got two, don't they?
Are you guys talking about the ULM kid?
Yeah, I think Carson's talking about the kid from Auburn, but also the ULM kid.
Yeah. So, and hey, I actually haven't written anything about that kid yet, because here's the thing. Yeah, I know he went on Instagram and he posted that he's going to OSU, and he's confirmed with even you guys that he's going. But until he, like, signs anything, I mean, who knows what's going to happen with this kid. I mean, I mean, at this point, I don't even think he's signed a financial aid agreement. So we'll see what happens there. If everything goes as it should, I mean, he's a guy who should be on the roster. But you're right, man. They have really established themselves as kind of a prime destination for transfers, just being not just because, you know, Furman got drafted and Patman to the NFL, but because these are guys who've gotten playing time right away. And I think with these graduate transfers, I mean, these are guys who want to play, and they have at LSU. So, yeah, you know, credit to the coaching staff for continuing to look for those guys. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't add, you know, maybe one or two more graduate transfers as we go through the summer here.
Yeah, it certainly seems like a good way for a school that's maybe not as high up in recruiting as a Baylor or an OU to add some depth. I mean, Gundy talked about this spring, you know, they're not as deep as they would like. I think he said defensive line and maybe cornerbacks or safeties. What was your feeling about, we've talked a little bit about who's going to be the backup quarterback. It's weird. I told Carson that there's a backup quarterback race. Like, that hasn't happened, I don't feel like, in a while. But was your feeling that Gundy sort of kind of knows right now and just isn't going to say it yet, or do you think they haven't really decided?
Oh, honestly, I think they haven't decided, and it's maybe not because one guy hasn't proven themselves over the other guy yet. I mean, I think we all saw, you know, Taylor Cornelius in that spring game seemed to have a little bit more control of the offense, connected on a few of those deeper passes, was able to move the offense a little better. But I think there's just such a big gap right now between both of these guys and Mason that I would imagine the thought is we just have to make sure that Rudolph doesn't get hurt this year. I think they're just not in a position where either of these guys is truly ready to take over. And part of that is because they felt so comfortable last year with Walsh, obviously, as the backup. But I think that there's just such a big skills gap and a readiness gap there.
Yeah.
That they just want to see what's going to happen over the summer. Like, they have time to just say, okay, you two, like, let's see how much weight you've each put on. Let's see how much more you can progress, because, you know, they're going to have some time to decide through fall camp and even through some of the first non-conference games, if OSU can get ahead and plug these guys in, what they're made of. So I think they just really want these guys to continue to develop because there's such a big gap there. I think a big enough gap to the point where, you know, Keandre Woodgie, depending on, you know, what his learning curve is and just how much he's developed, I think he's got to be right in that conversation for the backup role as soon as he gets here, just because I don't think we've seen enough from these backup guys to really say that one of them's ready to really assume that role.
Well, Kyle and I just assumed that Taylor Cornelius, the oil baron, was just a walk-on, had no real shot at any meaningful playing time ever. But just watching the spring game and kind of judging by what the fans think, it sounds like Cornelius has a legit shot at the number two spot. Did you see that coming, or is this kind of out of left field?
It's a little out of left field. It's funny. He is like an oil tycoon. He should wear like a monocle when he plays or something. It'd be great with a name like that.
That's so good.
But, yeah, it's a little bit surprising, I think. I mean, anytime you get just a walk-on guy to come, but, you know, he set a bunch of school records at a little 2A school in Bushland, Texas. And so it's not like he was a guy who didn't have the potential to really compete for a scholarship and a job. You know, being that he's 6'6" and he's got a big arm, you know, he was just so skinny was the problem out of high school. He was rail thin. You know, that's why it was mostly kind of Division II schools going after him. But, you know, once again, all praise to Rob Glass, the miracle worker of getting guys in shape and, you know, putting them in a good situation to grow. You know, he's in a position where I think he definitely has a good chance. You know, Kolar's got the ground game that we've heard so much about, and I don't think yet we've really seen that evolve on the field. But that, I think, is his biggest asset right now. But like I said, I just think there's such a big gap. It's hard for anyone to speculate where these guys are going to be in a few months.
All I can think about now is that Pete Carroll monocle gif. Have you guys seen that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's not bad.
Kyle, you've been around Mike Gundy a lot just throughout spring ball. I think one thing that gets lost a little bit in the context of what I do and what you do is that you get to see Mike Gundy off camera. You get to talk to him off camera, off the record, probably even. What's the feeling that you've gotten this spring about his confidence level on a scale of one to like peak Gundy, like at the top of his confidence.
Right.
Where do you feel like he's at right now?
Oh, I mean, he's not, you know, pre-2011 confident, or even, you know, during that season when he was, you know, his walk-off interviews with the beat reporters back then were like 20-minute sit-downs from what I'm told, to where he was just willing to talk about anything and everything. But I think he's real comfortable with this team. I think spring for him is really the time where he can relax the most because, you know, there's not a lot of pressure. Like I said, everything is just optimism, and for good reason this year. And you can tell that, you know, he's been real candid and kind of, you know, joking off camera. You know, he was before one of his last press conferences, he was talking about how Gary Ward was coming over to his house in his barn and giving his son hitting lessons soon. And, you know, you could just see how excited he was, just the look on his face, just being a dad and, you know, having his kids getting some pretty cool lessons from an OSU legend. So, you know, it's just little things like that. He seems to be in a good mood. And like I said, he should be. This is a talented team with some key veterans coming back, some up-and-comers they really like, you know, just thinking about Chad Whitener and Jordan Burton, some linebackers who played really well in their first go-round as starters, and they're back. And, you know, there's reasons that they should be in a good mood. And, you know, I think we're once again just very far removed from the 2014 version of Coach Gundy when things weren't going so well, and that was reflected in kind of how he acted with us. But it's really been great. This is even with the last three losses of the year, this has been a team and a coaching staff that's taken their lumps kind of with a little bit more ease, and that's kind of transitioned, I think, in spring ball.
Kyle, I'm a little sad this spring. Raymond Taylor no longer in the team. My boy Ray-Tay.
Yeah, man.
What happened?
Champ.
What happened?
Oh, it's just, I don't know. I know with him, he felt like last year was just such a breakout year for him, because it was. I mean, you know, he was getting to start late in the year, and with all the guys that are going in and out, but, you know, I think back to the Sugar Bowl. He's, you know, when OSU brings out the guys that they're making available for interviews on the day that they have offense, you know, Raymond Taylor's the guy. And I remember asking him, like, man, how crazy is this? Like, you're a walk-on, and, like, for the Sugar Bowl, like, you are the running back representative, you know, for this team to talk to the media. It's just crazy. And, he was never a big talker, but, you know, he smiled. I think he understands just how wild that was for him to be in that position. And my guess is that, you know, he came, you know, through winter workouts and, you know, through spring ball, and kind of realized, like, man, what I did last year maybe isn't enough. He probably thought in his head that he might be able to earn that starter's job. But when you got such a crowded group of guys like Chris Carson, Ren Childs, and then, you know, he finds out that Barry J. Sanders is coming on the campus. Like, if he really wants to play, if he wants to get 20 snaps a game, 20 carries a game, he's just got to go somewhere else to find it. And, you know, I can respect the guy for doing that, for all the reasons that someone's going to want to transfer, you know, a walk-on who's fought his way to the top, but, you know, maybe then it's even still not enough. You know, go get some playing time. You know, go, you know, even if he has to go to FCS or a smaller school to do it, you know, I wish him the best, because, like you said, he was a fan favorite. He was a media favorite. He was a bowling ball down there when they needed him late in games. You know, really fighting off defenders and blowing through guys to score touchdowns. And he was the only running back doing that. So it's I know it's sad for those OSU fan base, but I'm happy for Raymond. He was always a good kid to talk to, and I hope he finds some success somewhere.
Two things I want to know if you're buying or selling. The first is something that it feels like we've heard for the last 8 years, which is that Marcel Aitman is actually going to be a force this year. And then the second thing is just the running back situation. I feel like Gundy talked a little bit about that this spring. I remember one press conference or one interview specifically, just him talking about how Chris Carson was maybe the most improved guy over some span of time. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks. So are you buying into Oklahoma State's running game, or are you selling it? And then also Marcel Aitman.
With Aitman, you know, it's interesting, because this time last year, the storyline with him was, you know, oh, he's overcome this underclassman maturity. You know, we were writing about how he understood where he messed up in terms of his practice habits and his just mentality and his attitude, and and how he was going to turn it around. And he did have a good year last year. I mean, man, I think about the Iowa State game, you know, and a few others where he really used his frame and his size as a difference maker. And it was big for OSU when it was going to happen. So he's a senior now. You can tell he's a lot more mature. And just in talking with us, you know, he's a guy who's able to kind of dictate and talk about the things he needs to do in a very mature way, in a professional way. You know, the opinion I'm looking forward to getting is from Casey Dunn, the receivers coach. We'll get to talk to him sometime over the summer at their golf luncheon. He's a very unfiltered, give it to you straight kind of guy. And I think once we hear from him, he's really going to be a good judge of where he's at. And if Marcel's on the cusp of a breakout year, you know, I think Casey will say that. And I think that is something that we can kind of take as his word going forward, just in the way that he's talked about this group in the past. So I think there's a lot of potential there. They have to get him going, I think. But tying into your next question, a lot of his success is going to be based on if OSU can run the dang football this year. Yeah. If they can force teams to respect the run. I mean, you send Marcel Aitman over the middle going deep over, you know, a single safety who's not able to get behind him. And it's see you later because he's not going to get out jumped. So, running backs, who knows, man? I don't want to speculate. I've been speculating for like two seasons in a row now about what's going to happen. The one thing I'll say about everything, all the different storylines, all the guys who could be the starter, is I'll just go back, man. Chris Carson looks the part. I mean, this guy is chiseled. He is 6'1", 215, and he looks every bit of an NFL running back. And through fall camp last year, as we got to watch some of the practices, it showed. And then all of a sudden, during the season, for whatever reason, whether it was his injury at Texas, the learning curve from JUCO, he just was never the same guy. So I think for him, a lot of it's got to be mental. He probably maybe was a little bit overconfident in what he was going to do last season, just with all the talk about the one and done and going to the NFL, the Georgia stuff, and just how good he could be. But, you know, just for the whole unit, the running backs, the offensive line, it's just they're out of excuses at this point. And it's just I know there's going to come a point next season where we're going to be writing about this and where does it stand and why haven't they improved? And, you know, it's just such a broken record. For OSU's fan's sake and for our sake, it would have been nice if they could have just scored one rushing touchdown in the spring game. Like, I don't know, like Glenn Spencer, just let it happen, you know, like just make everyone at ease. But that didn't happen. They couldn't run the ball in the spring game. So I don't know. It's going to be something we'll be writing and thinking about until they're able to, you know, put up 100-yard games consecutively for the first time since probably, you know, 2013. So who knows, but they got a lot of options and Barry J is super intriguing. So we'll just kind of have to sit back and wait, I think.
Well, in last season, their inability to run the football made me look at Mason Rudolph even more impressively, just how well he was able to play despite no running game at all. And you mentioned Gundy's swagger circa 2011. I think Mason has that now in 2016. He's speaking at a FFA convention today, and girls are just beside themselves. He's big man on campus, Kyle. And do you think he's ready to be the guy? No more of this Walsh stuff. Just do you think he's really embracing his role as the face of OSU?
I think so. I mean, he's another guy who just looks the part. I mean, I would just be shocked if by the end of this season we're not talking about whether or not he's going to decide to declare for the draft. I mean, he's just with that strong arm and, like you mentioned, his ability to evade the rush. This is his team. For all the talk about Walsh last year and how incredible his performance was, and it was, man, it's easy to kind of get lost in that, you know, the nostalgia of Walsh and, you know, the leadership and all the narratives we've heard. I mean, he was a dang good football player for this team last year. But now that he's gone, I think Rudolph likes that because, you know, he's the pitcher. He's the quarterback. He wants the ball in his hands. He wants to be in the red zone with opportunities to score. And I'm sure he's embraced that. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to think he's a junior already coming up in the fall. You know, but he's got a lot of talent around him. And if that offensive line can even just improve a hair, it's going to go a long way in Mason inflating those numbers and getting to a point where he becomes a kind of a draft radar type of guy as a junior. So no concerns there because, you know, like I said, he's in a great mood because his quarterback situation is as good as he could think it could be in terms of having a starter. You know, the backup's another story. But when you got a leader and a guy like Rudolph, you know, everything else seems to just kind of come a little easier.
Thankfully, he's not one of the pitchers for Josh Holliday's baseball team.
Right, as we saw, yeah, he is not a pitcher. I should not have used that analogy for that one.
I will say, nothing has made me feel older than thinking about Mason Rudolph leaving college. I don't know why that's like the thing it feels like he's like still a freshman. But one thing I wanted to ask you about the NFL draft, which is coming up on Thursday, would you be more surprised, Kyle, if Emmanuel Ogba went in the second round, or if no other Oklahoma State player got drafted besides Emmanuel Ogba?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think I'd be more shocked if no other OSU players got drafted. I think at this point, and it's actually funny you say that as we're talking here, I got my Word file open with an Ogba story I'm working on. I talked to Ogba yesterday on the phone about that, about his draft stock, because this is always just the time of the anonymous scout and what people are saying, and, oh, no, he's a third-round guy, oh, his motor isn't good, blah, blah, blah. And it's interesting because, how much that affects NFL teams and their evaluation, whether they read media reports, whether they see what other scouts are saying. I don't know, but it comes down to, is there a team that really likes you? Like, that's the most important thing in the draft. Like, you just got to get one team to get on board with you, and you're going to be good to go. And I think that's why it'd be surprising to me if a guy like Jimmy Bean or Kevin Peterson, or even both of them, don't get drafted. I think that they've done enough on film, and I think they're high enough character guys with the statistics to back it up to get drafted somewhere late. Where that's going to be, I have no idea. But in Ogba's case, who knows? I think whenever you're a late first round grade, I think there's just a little bit of wiggle room there where, for some reason, whatever it is, you might end up falling. And if he goes in the second round, I mean, I don't think that he's going to be all too upset. Obviously, he loses out on quite a bit of money. But he's going to graduate in about a month here, less than a month here. So he's done with school. So I think this is a smart decision either way. But yeah, man, his draft position is going to be interesting. Just with, like I said, all the gossip that goes around, the need for defensive end pass rushers in the NFL, Ogba's intangibles, the ridiculous numbers he put up at the combine, how it's all going to shake out. And it's going to be real fun.
Who would you say was the MVP of spring? Do you even have one? Did you see enough?
Oh, gosh. MVP of spring. I don't know. I mean, I would think that you probably got to go with just a guy like Rudolph. I mean, he's continued to thrive. He's, he seems to be 100% healthy and really the owner and leader of this team and wants to be that guy. Defensively, I don't know about an MVP, but another guy I wanted to talk about was Edison Magruder. The freshman safety played last year. They got him in at linebacker, and everything I've heard, man, he's really made some strides and looks the part to maybe play that star where he can be flexible enough to cover guys and also run downhill. So he's another guy I think, maybe not the MVP, but someone that fans should definitely be expecting to make some contributions next year.
Do you think the offense or the defense is going to be better in 2016? Because I think that there was this maybe a little bit of a misperception last year that the defense was way better than the offense when at the end of the season it got exposed a little bit and you sort of sort of started to see that, let's look at points per drive, like who's actually being more successful,
right?
And more efficient with the drives they get. So what do you think about 2016 in terms of which unit will be better?
Oh, I think it's a no-brainer that the defense took a bigger hit in terms of talent and guys leaving. Losing Bean and Ogba, they've got so many young redshirt sophomore defensive ends who can fill those roles and can still be productive. But I just don't think that they can match the kind of havoc that Ogba put out there, man. And Kevin Peterson's such a big loss as well. And offensively, you lose Glidden, who was such a great safety valve in that offense with Rudolph when he was out on the run. You lose Brandon Shepherd, who kind of had a disappointing senior year, but pretty much everyone else is back. So I don't think there's a whole lot of excuses to not see some improvement on this offense. And then I think there's a little bit of kind of wonder about where this defense is going to be because, the last three games were really bad. But, man, you look at some of the gritty performances and just the way they were able to step up late in close games. they just played so many close games, it's hard to remember so long after now. But who are going to be those guys who are going to step and make plays? Who's going to step up and kind of fill a lot of that leadership void, the locker room void? That's a big question. They got guys they like who are young, but until you're battle tested, who knows? So that's why I'd probably give the offense the edge in terms of, you know, what unit is, I would think, would be stronger next year.
Yeah, it's a big year for Glenn Spencer. Has he been reciting warrior poems to you in anticipation of the season?
Not quite. Man, his situation's interesting. Because, man, he was so close to getting that UTSA job.
Yeah.
You know, just everyone that we had talked to, and I think he's ready for that opportunity. Being able to recruit Texas and go down there, and then all of a sudden, you know, to not get the job at kind of the last second. You wonder how that, like, wears on a guy's psyche. Now, we're talking about a guy who recites war poems, like Carson said, so I don't know that his, you know, mental makeup is as fragile as mine would be in that situation. But, this is a bit of a rebuilding year for them with losing guys. But, you know, Spencer and especially Joe Bob Clements, their defensive line coach, you know, those two guys working in tandem with all the young talent they've developed up front, I think they feel pretty confident going into the year. Spencer, I still think of a guy who's going to pop up as a potential head coaching candidate, just with, you know, the type of guy he is and his reputation with, you know, being a good leader and kind of that moral compass. He's going to have his opportunity.
Okay, we'll get you out of here on this, Kyle. Do you enjoy your job more during the spring or during the fall?
It's a toss-up. Honestly, probably the fall. Because the spring, it's like, you know, there's one practice a week where we get to get interviews off of. You get that, and it's mostly, like I said, it's just we're really optimistic. Everyone's doing great. And then in between, I'm doing a bunch of random stuff. I covered the marathon last weekend in Oklahoma City and did a bunch of stuff on that. The high school guys at our paper need some help covering some spring championship stuff. So it's just a smorgasbord of weird stuff, and it's content that people aren't going to be reading as much, but it's kind of our duty as a newspaper to cover it all. So it's a weird balance. I'd honestly rather just be super busy and focused in a middle of a football season just for my own sanity. But I tell you what, I'm going to enjoy June and July when not a whole lot's going on, when we can really kind of slow down and, like, everyone in our sports desk takes simultaneous vacations, so that should be fun.
Thanks for joining us, Kyle. We appreciate your time and insight for two people who are not as up to Oklahoma State football as we should be right now. And, we appreciate the time.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Have a good one.
Okay.
See you, Kyle. I feel much more knowledgeable now.
Yeah, that was great.
At OSU football.
Yeah, I feel like
I'm so out of season.
I feel like I always say that was great about every single person that comes on here, but
you do, but it's okay.
Yeah, but
that was good.
Yeah, it was. He certainly has his arms wrapped around Oklahoma State football news. How about Gary Ward going out to Mike Gundy's house,
to his barn?
How great is that?
Can you just picture that, like Gundy with just a gleam in his eye as Gary Ward's giving hitting instruction?
By the way, I got...
Can Gary not go help out Holiday?
Yeah.
While he's there?
Somebody the other day was giving me a hard time for making fun of Gundy's Oklahoma accent.
Yeah.
I'm not... I think people think that I'm, like, legitimately making fun of Gundy. Like, it's tongue-in-cheek. Like, I think Mike Gundy's a really good football coach, and I think he's unintentionally hilarious. Like, I love him. Like, I think he's awesome. Like, as somebody who covers Oklahoma State sports, like, I'm not making fun of him because I think he's an idiot.
Yeah, we're not mocking him. I think his accent is very endearing, and it makes for good Twitter jokes. I mean, that's basically all it is. I mean, like I said, I have an Oklahoman accent myself, so I'm not above reproach when it comes to accurate and, you know, mature.
Did you see Gundy repping that virtual reality stuff?
Yes. I thought that was really, like, really cool, actually. Yeah. I know you thought it was weird, like, to bring... Here's my mask. I brought a mask with me on the road recruiting.
Can you put it on
your mom real quick, you know? Like, that's kind of weird. But I do think it's cool how cutting edge OSU is getting with recruiting. Like, well, they're... They're very cutting edge.
And it makes you wonder why they're not maybe more successful in recruiting. They can't get any traction with top guys, whether in football or basketball or whatever. But yeah, kudos to them, because I think that is, I feel like they do a really good job with all the, probably some people would think, auxiliary stuff that goes into running an athletic department.
Yeah, and Gundy's even like, you know, mimicking Drake, which went right over your head.
Oh, yeah, like I don't understand this tweet at all.
You probably didn't even understand like where Gundy was on the picture.
No, I didn't see it. I had to go back after Cowboys Ride for Free posted about it and try to figure out what was going on.
That was like me trying to figure out the initial Ricky Fowler Snapchat. I thought it was like Jordan Niebrugge from OSU, but it was actually Jordan Spieth. So you're not alone on the things going over your head via social media.
Did you see that Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus said they want to join Fowler and Spieth next year?
I saw you make a Gary Player joke. I did not know that he actually wanted to go.
Yeah, he tweeted it at all four of those guys and said he's in for 2017.
Will there be a gallery next year? will fans just like know like what time of year it is? Like, oh, let's go to Baker's Bay and watch Spieth and then play in their chubbies.
I'm telling you, it's the sixth major.
It's incredible. And I guess Spieth quoted you and said it was the sixth major,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so Shane Bacon called it the fifth major, and then I called it the sixth major because we've already got the Players' Championship, which is known as the
fifth major. Fifth
major. And then Spieth tweeted it. Like, I mean, he didn't tweet me, but I think – I don't know. I think Thomas is the only one on there that follows me, so maybe they picked it. Maybe Spieth just thought of it. Maybe great minds.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe, but so. I was in Dallas, obviously, covering the NBA. But any free moment I had, I was getting back on my Snapchat and just watching the shenanigans at Baker's Bay, and just each one they got a little more drunk and did a little more ridiculous things.
There was like there was some span of time that I kind of missed out. I just didn't check it for a while, and when I and for whatever reason, this 8 hour or 12 hour stretch, like Ricky snap, is it appropriate to say snapped? Like, is that how you say it?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. He snapped
like a ton of stuff, and so I'm catching up on it. I mean, it felt like I was watching like a short documentary.
I know.
I
had to start like you can push the screen to skip to the next one. Like, I can only see them chip golf balls at their crotches so many times, so I had to like skip a few of those. But it was incredible. I felt like I was there.
What was your favorite moment?
Oh, the pro tracers with the commentary, like maybe Spieth's David Faraday impersonation probably was my favorite.
It was really good.
It was awesome.
I mean, it was impressive.
And I think that was the most enlightening part of the entire thing, was seeing Spieth. You know, he's so buttoned up and so professional, and it reminded you that he's a kid just like Fowler, and they can party and have fun and, you know, not be so serious all the time. And that was the most, I think, surprising thing, was just seeing Spieth in that element. I come to expect that from Ricky. I don't know anything about Smiley or Justin Thomas, but it was kind of cool to see Spieth in that element.
Yeah, I agree. We had a great group chat, me and some other golf guys, and we were talking about how Spieth and Fowler's agents were just sweating through like a shirt an hour. Like,
oh,
like
I know.
Updating and seeing guys jump off balconies, and like, that had to be not an enjoyable 4 days for those guys.
How many snaps were taken that Ricky kind of like turned to the guys like, yeah, we probably shouldn't post that? I'm sure a bunch. And I'm sure their agents were like frantically texting them like, do not snap anymore. Stop it. Don't show off the tequila sign one more time.
The other thing that was hilarious to think about was thinking back to like, who would this have been in like the early 2000s? And the foursome that I came up with was Tiger, Phil, Jim Furyk, and Vijay Singh. And just thinking about like that foursome doing what this foursome did and snapping it all, like how unintentionally hilarious that would have been.
Wait,
versus
that's your four?
Well, I'm just saying.
You're just picking good golfers, or are you picking guys who would have hung out?
No, I'm picking good golfers. Like,
because Jim Furyk would have zero fun.
Oh,
Vijay and Tiger wouldn't be caught dead vacationing.
Well, and Vijay would just be hitting balls on the range the whole day. Like,
yeah,
he would be. I mean, Phil would be fun, but like,
I feel like Jesper Parnevik would have been in there with his goofy hat.
He would have been a good time, but I just mean in terms of like, it's rare that you see I mean, Jordan Spieth's the number three player in the world. Ricky Fowler's the number six player in the world. Like, it's not like they're like 300th in the world. Smiley Kaufman played in the final group at the Masters. It's rare that you see guys that are that good at their sport up that close on anything, much less social media that they're kind of curating.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the ribbing of not only Spieth's divot, but Smiley was on the driving, or he's about to drive a shot, and Spieth is like, final round of the Masters here. About to drop off an 81.
The Spieth
divot. And I got to tell you, I'm going to take all of their stuff onto the golf course with me. I will be pro-tracing my friends' terrible drives. Whoever's in my cart will be my cartner. I will be stealing all their material.
It was great. The Spieth divot thing was... It felt a little too soon.
It like, stung a little.
Like, I had to go back and watch it, like, 10 times to make sure that that's what they were actually saying. Because I was stunned that was...
That was good stuff.
Going on.
So, will you be covering Baker's Bay next summer?
I hope so.
Next year.
I've already asked my editor to send me down there.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth the trip.
I think Michael Jordan has a house down there. I'm just shack up over there.
That's in the Bahamas, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's where Ricky used to take the model girlfriend.
But he's single now. He brings the boys.
Mm-hmm.
Smart man.
Yeah. Okay, so you covered Thunder. Matt, is there anything else we want to talk about with what Kyle said?
I think we're good. I think guys are going to be working out and getting better.
What? It's a pretty hot take.
I loved his cliche answer. It was like, the bite I've gotten every single year from Stoops and Gundy.
Yeah, that was great. Is there anywhere that you, in particular, that you want to see Emmanuel Ogba get drafted?
Oh, not particularly. I'd like to see him go in the first round, just for first round's sake. And especially, if he's going to go in the first round, he's going to go to a good team.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I'd like to see him go to Carolina, you know, or the, you know, teams that are perennially in the playoff picture,
yeah.
You know. So, I hate when guys, like, OSU's had a lot of high draft picks in the last few years, and they always go to really crappy teams. So it'd be kind of cool to see him go to a good team.
Well, yeah, and it's like it's kind of the Spurs corollary, right? Like the Spurs always pick guys, and you're like, how did they find this guy? And it's like, well, part of that is that you're inserting somebody who's obviously a very talented player into a good culture, and you're not sticking Justin Gilbert on the Browns, and it just does not go well, you know? And So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, I hope he gets drafted between, like, 22 and 30, something like that. I think that would be terrific. Did you agree with Kyle that Mason Rudolph is, like, there's going to be a real debate next year about whether he should turn pro or not?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm with him in that when you just stand next to Mason Rudolph and just see him in person, like, that's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, there's no doubt in your mind. And it's just going to be a matter of – how good of a season does he have, and how high does he think he'll go? Because I think if he is anywhere near the first round, I think you got to go. Or if you're in the first round, you got to go. Now, if he's a second, third, fourth range, I think he'll stay. But and who knows? Maybe he wants to stay anyway. I don't claim to know, but
I think
he's definitely going to be in the NFL. It's just a matter of when.
The way that quarterbacks go from college to the NFL is so strange to me, because it almost has nothing to do with how successful you are in college. I mean, you've got this year Jared Goff and Carson Wentz like going to go in the top 10, and it's like, what? Like, I mean, I know those guys had success in college, but they didn't play on great teams. One of them didn't even play Division I. I don't understand how it works, I guess is what I'm saying. It's just such a foreign thing to me.
Well, teams are just desperate for quarterbacks. There's like eight good quarterbacks in the entire NFL.
Yeah.
So every year those teams are going to be looking to land one. And this year those, I guess, are the best too, it's just a down year for quarterbacks, which I think would even help Mason Rudolph more, because he didn't have a great year last year. I mean, I thought he had a great year, but just, you know, the layman looking at his numbers and everything, they're not going to say, well, that guy's a first-round pick. But once scouts get to see him, yeah. I think it might be a done deal.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the point. Is like it does. I don't know that numbers really matter because, like you said, like you stand next to him and you're like, oh, this dude's gonna play in the NFL. Like,
yeah.
I mean, same thing with somebody like a Whedon. I mean, I don't know that I've ever stood next to Mason. Is he bigger than Whedon?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he might be too.
Yeah, he is. Not just height, but just size too.
Yeah.
He's impressive, man. He's really impressive.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he's just more than anything, his demeanor too. Like he's already kind of like a pro in that way. He's very professional, very Ricky Fowler-esque with his answers.
Minus the Casa Amigas. Okay, I want to ask you real quick, and then we'll get out of here. Were you in Barry Trammell dubbed as the greatest Thunder press conference of all time?
I was not. I was going live on the floor when all that happened. I missed the greatest press conference of all time.
It was pretty good.
It was fantastic. And I was kind of stunned by it all. Because, like, yeah, there was bad blood. Yeah, the Mavs were just trying to make things ugly just because they knew they had no shot. But the hate is real. Like, they hate Villanueva. They hate Mark Cuban. And that's pretty apparent based on their answers. I thought it was pretty incredible.
What's your feeling about this sort of... I think the transformation is complete now in terms of the Thunder, like Westbrook and Durant specifically, going from being perceived as these, you know, super nice, like gentle guys, their rookie and second and third years, to now, like, I mean, they're crazy. Like, they get, you know, Russell Westbrook's dropping F-bombs on fans and Durant's getting thrown out of games. Like, they're insane. Like,
well, Durant's cussing in interviews all the time now.
Yeah, like the transformation has been fully completed. Do you like it? Is it weird? Like, what has been your thought on that? You've covered them.
I don't like it or dislike it. I think it's I guess I like it because they're just being themselves. I don't think they're trying to make anyone happy. I don't think they're trying to put on a front, because I've seen them at practice. I've seen them, you know, close up at games. That's how they are. They're not choir boys, and nor should they be. They're playing, you know, it's startling. Like, when you go down to the floor of an NBA game, like I always am taken aback when kids are sitting courtside, because it is not for the faint of heart. It is, it's unspeakable language going on an NBA floor. And it's very much so the same way in football. You're just not that close, you know. So I like it because they're being themselves, and I think it's a good thing that they're being themselves and they're not trying to, you know, pretend to be something they're not.
So there's different stuff said on the floor of like a Thunder Mavs game than say like during the final round of the Masters.
I don't know. Spieth and that rules official might have gotten NBA-esque from what you told me.
Yeah,
no. But yeah, it's a lot different. Like. Like, that's one of the first things I noticed when I first started covering the NBA. I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is bad. Like, cover your ears, children.
Who's the worst? Like, who have you noticed?
Oh, Garnett was the worst.
Oh, my gosh.
Garnett was just the whole time just – he didn't speak other than cuss words.
That's – I can't even imagine. Like,
they all do. Coaches, players. And I like that. I think that's fine. That's never bothered me. I thought it was ridiculous when they – was it college football? They would give a flag for it or something. Didn't this pop up sometime recently, like controversially, like language? Someone got in trouble for it while playing. I can't remember what I'm thinking of, but
I don't know.
My point was, if you go to an NFL game or a college football game, like, they're cussing every single play. But like, I guess like it was college basketball, maybe, is what I'm thinking of. But like, that goes on at every level. Like, that went on in like high school level. So like that language has never really bothered me, but that was pretty startling the first time I was close to an NBA floor.
Yeah, that's funny.
But I'm ready for Spurs Thunder. I don't know if they're going to win or not, but that's going to be an all-out war.
Yeah, it'll be good. Probably to go to the finals, maybe.
Well, Steph doesn't get healthy. It could be the winner of that could go to the NBA finals for sure.
Yeah, so... All right, Carson, good time today. It was good to have a guest on. I know I promised a guest last week, and then my crawl space under my house flooded, so not
that's no good.
Not good time.
Everything good now?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay.
I pumped it all out, and we're good to go. But,
I can't wait to come down to Dallas and actually have free time to play golf with you and pro-trace your terrible drives.
You better start doodling right now, because it's going to be... they're going to be bad. I haven't played very much this year, so it's not gonna
I
be
haven't either. I went to the range the other day and it felt good, but the margin for error at the range is like 0, or I mean it's 100, you know. It's like if, as long as you hit it more than 100 yards, you're happy. So it's like, oh, this is great. I'm playing awesome.
We got to get you prepped for when is Karsten? Is it in June or July?
Oh, it's in first week of August, I believe. And last time I went, I got the shanks. So I'm going to be hitting 100 balls a day in preparation for Karsten.
You don't, nobody needs to get the shanks in front of Glenn Spencer and company. That's not good.
If I was paired with Glenn and got the shanks, like how hard would he be coaching me?
He'd be
my partner, and he would be reciting a warrior hymn from the 1800s as to why my drives are not straight.
You would either need to leave or just have somebody bring you a lot of Casa Amigas.
I think that I'd probably do the latter and just let him hit my shots for me. Or call out James Washington from the bullpen. Like, James, you're good at like every sport. Like there's this golf ball.
Like James Washington right now, over under shooting a 78.5 from the tips at Karsten.
Oh, that's not happening. I mean, even if he plays golf regularly, Karsten's a monster.
Yeah, that's it. True.
Have you been there?
No, I haven't. I've
oh my lord, it is impossible.
I'm not allowed to come to the media stuff, and
oh yeah,
you know.
You know people in Stillwater. You're a big dog now. Yeah. Like, I'm sure he gets you on.
Yeah,
you just show up with Whedon. Just call up Whedon. He'll get you on.
Oh yeah, he did. He did say that we were gonna play.
Or Chucky Three Sticks. Come on,
that would be fun.
Yeah, let's get a foursome of Chucky, Whedon, and you and me. Yeah, let's do it.
That'd be great. Sorry, Zach, you're out.
He's in Dallas. Busy. He's coaching up quarterbacks.
Okay, Karsten, we will talk to you later on.
All right, have a good weekend.
See you.